Good morning. I thought that would be a fun way to start the morning, to give you an epic sense of this global, universal, cosmic story that we find ourselves in, and that we're going to talk about how we want to frame it in the positive so that we can talk about our faith without our fingers crossed. That's our topic for this morning. What I would like you to do is to turn to one other person and tell them the teaching of Jesus that you find the most difficult to follow. What teaching of Jesus do you find the most difficult to follow? So turn to somebody else, and if you need to pick up a third, if you find a straggler, then that's fine. But what is the teaching of Jesus that's the most difficult to follow?
So them, and we shame the doubt. It is all a lie. All we ever really need is love. There's no need to shed more blood. Look upon the cross. Look upon the cross. Yeah, guys.
Let's pray together. God of all, light and love of the world, we thank you that you are so near us and that we may be near you. We thank you that throughout our days we may be people who listen to you with all our hearts and minds. A listening people who can receive what is good and true for our lives, and who can witness the power you give us through the Savior. Protect us in all things. Look into our hearts and into the situation for each one of us, where many things are still faulty and unclear. Deliver us from evil, for the kingdom shall be yours. From you the power shall come. Your glory shall radiate from our lives, and we shall praise and thank you forevermore. Amen.
If I were to ask you what makes someone a follower of Jesus, or what makes someone a disciple, or what makes someone a Christian, what would be your answer? What makes somebody a Christian? Serving God? Okay. Belief in the life and testament of Jesus Christ. Okay? Somebody else? What makes somebody a Christian? No more? That's it? All right. So I was raised, and I don't know how many of you were raised, because that sounds very doable, I'll have to be honest, except the part about following Jesus. But I was raised that if you were at, say, a camp meeting or a church service, and you went down to the front at the end of the service and gave your life to Jesus, you prayed a prayer and gave your life to Jesus, that's what made you a Christian. Anybody familiar with this model?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Much of the room. Then it turns out that's a little bit of a bait and switch, because after you ask Jesus into your heart, whatever that means, then you have this stamp where you get to go to heaven after you die, and you think, yay. Then it turns out you also need to behave correctly, which was not in the contract, not even in the fine print. They said if you believed in your heart that Jesus is Lord, right, and confess your mouth, you're going to raise him from the dead, you'll be saved. Right? That was the deal. I signed up for that deal. And then they're like, also, you need to stop being such a jerk. I'm like, that was not, I did not. They're like, also, you should be less of a pervert. I'm like, what? They're like, you should probably drink less. I'm like, I'm 12. Right? So the contract keeps coming. All these conditions start piling up, which is why around here we use this tripart formulation. We say belong, behave, believe. Okay, and we do it in that order on purpose. Because in a lot of places, you get to belong only if you believe the right things. Believe is the alpha dog. Then you behave the right way. Then you get to belong. If you don't believe the right things or behave the right way, you don't get to belong. You get excommunicated or ostracized or marginalized or judged or whatever it is. So we have decided that belong is going to be our alpha female. She runs the show. Belonging. We're part of the kingdom. We all belong to God. We are part of the family of God. We have been adopted into God's family. We're the children of God. That's belong. Then, in conversation, we are going to work out what we believe. That's going to be our second. And we do that. That's why we're a conversational church. And then our last thing is going to be behave. And that happens because we meet together during the week in our small groups. We meet over the coffee table. We meet at the dinner table. And we try and figure out what's the implication for how we live out this faith we share. Right? So that's our tripartite formula. That we go that direction. And it's very different. And one of the things it does is it says, you belong. So we don't draw a line that says, if you believe the right thing or if you behave the right way, then you get in. You're in. We're all in, or we're all out. Because if you're not in, I don't want in. It's the opposite of the Groucho Marx saying that he would never want to be a part of a club that would have him as a member, right? I'm the opposite. If you can't belong, I'm not interested. I don't want into something that you are excluded from. We're in. Jesus changed the rules of religion. But here's one of the implications. If you've never heard of this idea, it's kind of a lofty philosophical idea. It's called a master signifier. And what happens is we've been talking about the word Christian around here and whether we want to stick with that word. But we've been joking about how words change. So I use the word subway. When I say subway, you probably think of sandwiches, not something underground. It's one of the ways that words kind of migrate. They're signs or signifiers, but their meaning migrates.
Also moonshine.
Moonshine?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm reading Frankenstein, and it talked to, like, literally moonshine was like sunshine, like when the moon shines.
Oh.
And that's not what it means anymore.
Is that a true story?
Yeah, it was like moonshine upon the pond or whatever.
I've never heard that.
I was like, oh.
I thought it was moonshine. When you got mooned by somebody who didn't tan much. Anyway. Bob actually had a great example, which is Groundhog Day. When we say we're having a Groundhog Day, we mean a day that seems to go over and over, right, in repetition. few of us think about the actual movie with Bill Murray, Groundhog Day, and even less of us think about that rodent that comes out of the ground in Pennsylvania and tells us whether winter will have six more weeks, right? Words migrate, and Christian is one of those words. Here's the thing with the master signifier. Is it something that used to be kind of central, but over the generations or over the decades, it gets moved out to the margin, and it becomes a boundary mark. And you guys have probably experienced this when you say to somebody like, oh, what kind of church you go to, or what, like if that conversation comes up, and you start talking about the way that your faith looks, and then somebody else will disqualify you because of, and here's some examples of master signifiers, because of what you think about the Bible. So the inerrant scriptures has become a master signifier. It now is a boundary mark. And it determines who's in and out. Do you have the right view of the Bible? Okay? Another one is your view on homosexuality or gay marriage. There are types of Christians who will use that as a boundary marker. So instead of talking about the gospel and the trajectory of inclusion, it will become a boundary marker where you say you're a Christian, but because you have this view, pro or con, on this issue, you're not a real Christian. Right, you're disqualified. You're outside the boundaries. And the Christian term has itself migrated to the point that instead of being the central thing about following Jesus, actually practicing the teachings of Christ and believing in his life and teachings and model, the word Christian has become a boundary marker that signifies who's in and who's out. And other people will often tell you whether you're in or out. And it's kind of a fun game because you'll be saying like, hey, I'm a Christian. And like, I don't think so. Right? What do you think about this? And you're like, am I on trial? Is this the Spanish Inquisition? Right? Because we have these litmus tests. How do you know if you're in or out? So the conversation that we want to have today is the word Christian something that we can claim in the positive without crossing our fingers? And say, I'm a Christian, and this is what that means? Or has that sign or signal or signifier migrated so far and become such a stark boundary marker that we want to call ourselves things like a Christ follower or a follower of the teachings of Jesus or a modifier like a red letter Christian or a progressive Christian, right? Do we want a gay loving Christian? Something like that. And so that's the conversation we're going to have today. And the reason that it's important is if we continue to designate ourselves by what we're not, if that's how we frame our identity as a believer and as a community, then our best energy goes towards the negative, negating something we don't want to be. And that is a waste of energy and does not promote the love of God. Unless we can say, claim the word Christian in a positive way and say, this is what I am and this is what it means, then maybe the vessel, the word, if we can't fill it with the meaning that we want, then maybe it's okay if we migrate to something else. So just before we take a break, I'll give you this illustration. I said this the first week, but it wasn't actually supposed to. I just kind of said it spontaneously. But in case you weren't here, I'll just remind you of this story. I picked up, when we first moved to L.A., I picked up a new hand motion. I'm not going to do the hand motion, but suffice to say, some people think it's a little effeminate, okay? My wife, God love her, asked me to stop doing the hand motion. And I said, why? And I think it's very demonstrative. I think it's very helpful. It says, it conveys exactly what I'm hoping to convey.
Are you doing it right now?
No.
Okay.
It's much worse than that.
Okay.
And she said, well, please stop doing it. It's not very manly. I contested this point by simply stating, I beg to differ. I am a man, and I do the motion. Therefore, it is manly. And I would like that to be the frame for the conversation we're going to have in the second half, which is when somebody says, you're not a real Christian. We say, I beg to differ, for I follow Christ, and I hold this view. Therefore, that is a Christian.
Christ is for us, then who can we be against? If Christ is for us, then love is tearing down the fence. If Christ is for us, then we've got no time to waste. If Christ is for us, then this world is what we're what we may. We are the king of, we are the sons and daughters of life. There's no division, just justice we need to find. We are the king of, we are the sisters and brothers of light. So shine on, shine. There's no division, just justice we need to find. We are the kingdom, we are the sisters and brothers of light. So shine on.
Perfect song. Actually, it's almost like you and I talk during the week, and then songs and ideas for sermons emerge out of
it. Yeah, you make up words like kingdom, and I'm like, that's dumb. Maybe it's cool. All right, fine.
It wasn't me, I promise. 3 minutes to do three things. So if you want to stand up, try and meet somebody new. If you brought an offering, there are baskets on that table and over here. And it's time to get a refill and then come back in because Jeff Arnold has a performance of scripture you will not want to miss. All right, 3 minutes to do three things.
No, I hate to disappoint after that introduction. They asked me to do it shirtless. That's not happening. I'm 58 years old. It's just not possible. Okay. Yeah. When he was gone, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man is glorified and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now. Where I'm going, you cannot come. A new command I give you. Love one another. As I loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another.
I thought you were going to do an interpretive dance. No, I misread that. Okay. So just before we go to our conversation groups, I want to introduce you just to a couple ideas that you can bandy. Because what I'm trying to do is put more clay on the wheel so that you can have more material to work with. As Ryan's laughing because he's picturing a ghost, kind of a Demi Moore, Patrick Swayze thing. But I just want to put more clay on the wheel so that you have more to work with. So I want to introduce you to two more things. The first is, we had a guy here a couple weeks ago, David Augsburger, and he was drawing a distinction between being a fan of Jesus and being a follower of Jesus. And, you know, I don't like whenever there's an either-or option, but this is an interesting one because so many people in our society are fans of Jesus. We're kind of familiar a little bit with the Hallmark 6-pound, 8-ounce baby Jesus, you know, that you can pray to before a NASCAR event. And we kind of appreciate Jesus from a distance. Like, we like Jesus. We don't like maybe the church or his followers or whatever, but we're like, we're not offended by Jesus. And that's how you know somebody has become Hallmark. We saw it again with Muhammad Ali this week, that we Hallmark people from the past, we kind of sterilize them and sanitize them and clean them up a little bit for public embrace. Jesus offended nearly everyone he encountered. And the early churches said that his life and story were an offense and a stumbling block. So the fact that we are fans of Jesus should actually make us very cautious. In fact, if you go to Walmart or if you're in the mall and you see Spencer's Gift or any place that sells these t-shirts, it's amazing that you'll see a t-shirt of Jesus, a t-shirt of maybe a Gandhi, maybe a Bob Marley, maybe a Che Guevara, just all t-shirts you can get for $15. Like, Jesus has just become one of many people who we're kind of fans of. But if you actually come in to listen to the teachings of Jesus, he demands something. And that's one of the things I want to talk about. The other thing is that when we try and follow Jesus, it is really important to recognize that it is not what qualifies us. Our behavior or living up to the standard is not what qualifies us to be a disciple. Being a disciple is a relational term, that we are in relationship to Jesus, both when we're doing well and when we're not doing well, when we succeed and when we fail, when we're on the crest of life and when we're in the trough. In both of those places, being a disciple simply means I'm related to Jesus. It's like being a part of a family. I can be arguing with people in my family, right? I could not have spoken to them for a while, but you can't take me out of that family, right? That's a relational connection. And so I want to break you up into groups of three, if possible, so that everybody gets a chance to talk. And I want to see what you think of this thing about being a fan of Jesus versus a follower. And then I want to ask this one simple question: what makes you a disciple? And then we're going to compare notes afterwards. So if you can break into groups of three and make sure you keep them small so everyone gets a chance to talk. And then I want to try and flesh this out a little bit. And then we're going to compare notes after. If you're new to the loft, by the way, welcome. I forgot to say that at the beginning. And one of the things you need to know is that we have four different kinds of conversations here at the loft. Sometimes we have our small groups and it just stays there. Sometimes we compare notes afterwards. We have this thing called bowl in the middle, which is after I introduce a new idea, I'm required to stand here and just turn and face whatever direction comes and just kind of popcorn style. But this is my favorite, which is the six chairs. And so I love when we, because we're a conversational community, that we put at the center those who have gathered and just compare notes. So we have two microphones here, and I'm going to turn this over to Joe to start, and just randomly because you're to my left. And I just want to hear what the conversation sounded like in your group, and I want to hear kind of where you are with this claiming the word Christian without crossing your fingers. What would it take? What does it look like? And I'm just turning it over to you guys. This is the emergent part of our conversation, just to see how it goes. It's, by the way, it is unscripted, and they found out that they were going to be a part of this. It
doesn't get a lot of attention because you have, like, Easter, and you have Good Friday, and you have Christmas, and that gets, you know, you go to the mall, you see decorations for it, but no one celebrates Ascension Thursday. But I love Ascension Thursday because, one, Jesus just flies away, and he just goes. But I also like the idea that like, for, in philosophy, this idea of a vanishing mediator, right? That Christ establishes this ethos within the community and leaves and allows the community to function on its own with the same teachings and spirit left by Christ. And how, at the same time, that Jesus, rather than becoming an object of love, causes other people to be an object of love by establishing this ethos within the community. And I love that idea. And I think it's, for Christians, at least for modern Christians, so often we use the term love as a kind of veil to kind of justify our violence, right? Like, I'm trying to protect my family, so I'm going to shoot you, or I'm going to bomb this other country. And I think what I see in Christianity is the impracticalness of love, where we love to the point that maybe we might die, maybe someone might kill us, but yet we place that impracticalness. We don't try to make sense of it. We just kind of do it, right? And just also, I'm sorry if this is coming out like all chopped up in my head, but also this idea that the Greek word for martyr, right, is this idea of testifying. And so that's how Christianity kind of spread during that time, because they got killed. And so, yeah, I mean, if anything, to be a follower of Christ is to love indiscriminately and impractically.
I sat with Josh and Whitney in the corner. And we talked about, one of the things we talked about was how people's concept of being a follower varies. And I grew up as a Methodist. I'm a cradle Methodist. And so I've always truly believed that there's nothing that can separate anyone from the love of God. Like, there's nothing that anyone could do. And so sometimes there are people who are fans and they go out of their way and you might volunteer or you might do nice things, but I don't think that those people are necessarily, they might behave in a Christ-like manner, but they might not consider themselves to be followers of Jesus. But they still live in the world, and they're still loved by God.
So I'm a pretty saucy person. And I, many of you know, I work with girls who've been trafficked or just teen moms in general. I've literally walked into a strip joint to, like, get a girl's camp forms filled out. And I feel like I'm a big fan of who Jesus was, because he didn't, you know, he was like, they need me more than I need to care about what you think of me. So, like, when I parked in front of the strip club outside my small town to go in and get the camp form signed, I literally, for a moment, was like, what if someone sees my car out front? It has a Young Life sticker on it. And then I was like, well, then I'll just go, well, Jesus would do it. And, like, that was kind of the intro to me being, I don't know, who I am, which is I kind of just don't care. I'm like, if it's going to show them that I love and care about them in a genuine way, the way that maybe Christ would have come to them, I'm gonna do that. I've cursed in club talks because my girls sit up and listen. So I like that Jesus is kind of like, he was edgy and he took people off guard and not a lot of people liked him, and he was totally comfortable and okay with that. And I kind of like go, okay, well, to be a disciple, I want to be that. I want to be more like him in that way. Like, who cares? You don't like me? That's not my problem. I'm going to go to people and tell them that they are loved and adored and cherished by him. So.
My group was my friend Steve and I. And, we actually didn't make it to the second part of this question, but as far as a fan or a follower, it was kind of like an interesting, I love talking about, like, big picture, like, the church as a whole, like, how can we become more progressive and, like, lot of, you know, things like gay issues or evolution, and just like I love talking about that. But when it comes to like actually looking in the mirror and like what am I like, how is my personal faith? It feels very like just kind of hollow. Just like, oh, I have like an unhealthy obsession right now with the Chicago Cubs, and if I could just, it's like we had like Steve and I were both talking about sports and just how it's like, wow, I have like this crazy passion for something that like, I mean, it's kind of fleeting, you know. It was like, wow, this is like a, this should be what how I feel about Jesus and the things that he cares about. And I'm like, as crazy as it sounds, it was kind of like a gut check, I guess. But.
Ironically, we talked about the Chicago Cubs in our group as well. So, seriously. Yeah. So, yeah, what does it mean to be a fan, and how much do we put into that, and versus when we come here every week and especially trying to teach your children certain things, and as our older is starting to get asked questions, and how do we answer those questions and talk to her about Jesus and what religion means in our life and what it would mean to be a follower of Jesus. And one of the three of us could not talk in the group, so... but part of what we were talking about was it is easier to be a fan, even if we are less devoted than one might be to a sports team. How do we then transfer that to being a fan who is sort of a passive? I know some of you in this room might argue that fans of sports teams are passive, but you know, observing something that is not, doesn't give back to you, isn't part of your existence and your soul in that way, and move into being a follower, which is more action-based. And what we came around to talking about was being a follower of Jesus is more about radical love, being active for justice every day in what we do, not being as caught up in, you know, at work, do what you do at work. At home, we're just trying to get by with a preschooler and an infant. So how do we actually take a pause from all that and infuse the most important part, which is being a follower of Jesus and being compassionate and being loving, and actively spending most of our time on justice issues.
So we, to answer the first part of the question, we all, well, except me, felt kind of, we fell into the fan camp, partly because we didn't feel like we knew enough. Like there needed to be more kind of knowledge or effort or information to be able to reasonably call ourselves followers of Jesus. I just kept derailing. I shouldn't be up here because I just derailed the conversation the whole time because I'm a super grumpy, like, angry Christian right now. So I was like, I'm neither. Because I'm holding Jesus personally accountable for all the actions of the church at large right now. So I was like, forget it. I'm neither. I'm not a fan or a follower. And one thing that we did, just to talk about kind of the Christian thing, is we all kind of acknowledged that the using stigma is not quite the right word, but the associations that we have with the word Christian are so deep and pervasive that, like, I personally myself, if somebody introduces themselves to me as a Christian, I'm kind of like, oh, really? And like, I was raised by two pastors. Like, I go to church every Sunday, but I'm still like, oh God. Like, they're Christian. Like, it's so pervasive that I can't even let it go. So, I don't know. Anyway, I shouldn't have had the last word because I'm basically like, no, it's all the worst. The end.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you naming that out loud so other people
can
hear.
You're welcome, though. You're never going to tag me again.
And, no, I will. But it's actually a perfect segue that for those of you who feel like you'd that knowing a little bit more might be good. Watch how I'm going to do this. Starting this Tuesday night, every other Tuesday night this summer, we're actually doing Faith Basics. Here in this room at 7:30. Did we say 7:30? 7 to 8:30 in this room on every other Tuesday night. And we're going to go through basically adult confirmation. So if you feel like, hey, it would do me some good to know about like some basics of faith, I will see you here Tuesday night at 7. Yes. No, it is. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the curriculum that we use for our youth confirmation, which we'll be doing this fall, and we're actually going to watch the video and use the basic format, and then we're going to make it a little more adult. Not triple X, but more mature. And, so we're going to do that, and it starts this Tuesday night. But I'm sure that we will get into matters of that, because as we look at kind of the spectrum of Christian beliefs and denominations, I'm sure we'll need to point out some issues and differences. So I think some of that stuff will come up. Can we thank our 6 volunteers? And I did use air quotes for volunteers. All right. So whenever we do an experiment like that and we hear a diversity of voices and perspectives, I always like to sing a unifying song afterwards. And so when we have a room where there's so many different opinions, it's nice when we all come back together.
Would you forgive me? I saw you.